Welcome to EJB Talks, Rutgers Blaustein School experts in policy, planning, and health, where we talk with our faculty and staff experts, as well as students, about how the fields of public policy, urban planning, public health, health administration, and public and urban informatics affect your lives. Welcome to EJB Talks. I'm Stuart Shapiro, the Interim Dean of the Blaustein School, and the purpose of this podcast is to highlight the work of my colleagues and our alumni in the fields of policy, planning, and health are doing to make the world, the country, and New Jersey a better place. We're starting a new season. I have a new job title. And most importantly, we are going to be focusing on the wonderful work done by the research centers here at the Blaustein School over the course of the next 8 to 12 weeks. Today, my guest is Kathy Crepsio, the director of the Heldrick Center of Workforce Development. Welcome, Kathy.
Thanks, Stuart. I'm happy to be here.
So let's start by letting our viewers know. We've had Carl on before, so they've heard a little bit of Heldrick work, but they may not have tuned into that episode for whatever reason. So let's start with some introductory stuff and let me know what the mission of the Heldrick Center is and what you do there.
The Heldrick Center is a university-based research center in the Blaustein School that provides an independent source of analysis for reform and innovation in the public U.S. workforce system. Its mission is to raise the effectiveness of the ever-changing American workplace. We do that by strengthening workforce education and training and enhancing equitable access to quality job opportunities for unemployed Americans and American workers. For the most part, our mission is having like three activities. We really work to create a national center of workforce policy and practice and scholarship. We work to translate our research into effective public policy and practice where we can, and we serve as a public forum for the presentation discussion of key workforce development policy issues affecting both New Jersey and the nation. My job, I am the executive director of the center. Carl Van Horn is the faculty director. I'm also a senior researcher at the center, and my area of expertise has been welfare reform, unemployment, and disability employment in older workers.
Great. That is a lot on your plate. There's a lot of those subjects that are very relevant right now. So let's move through a few of the things you're working on. I'd love to get to everything Heldrick does, but we're not going to make this a five-hour podcast. We're going to make it a 20-minute one. Let's start with unemployment, because that's one of those things that resonates the most with the public. You guys have done a lot of work on long-term unemployment over the past several years, decade, I think even reaching back to the 2008 recession. What work are you doing now in that area, particularly as it pertains to older workers?
Well, as you said, one area where the center has really deep subject matter expertise is in understanding both unemployment and long-term unemployment and the dislocated worker experience, which is also another fancy phrase for a laid-off worker. With special expertise, we've been studying older workers in dislocation for about 15 to 20 years now. Over the years, we've published research on public policy related to helping dislocated workers, and we have direct experience serving unemployed individuals. So we've not only been studying it from a research perspective, but we've been living it. For example, the Heldrick Center ran the September 11th Fund's massive employment assistance program right after 9/11. I was the project manager for that. We spent a couple of years in New York City and Long Island and New Jersey trying to help those who'd been laid off because of the September 11th attacks try to get back to work. We also, right now, have been running for the past 6 years a program which is completely privately funded, serving New Jersey's long-term unemployed over the age of 45, called the New Start Career Network. And the interesting thing about the New Start Career Network is not only is it a program directly for long-term unemployed over the age of 45, it's been completely virtual before the pandemic. And we also operate it as sort of a research lab where we have been studying and looking at over time how long-term unemployed have affected workers and how it has affected their job search. So it's been a very, very interesting project for us.
How has the pandemic affected this area, particularly the long-term unemployed?
Well, it's kind of strange to say, but it's been better for them in some ways because the labor market is so tight right now. And so perhaps 6 years ago, we would have thousands of people signing up to be members of our New Start program. Now it's 200 at best. And so what we're seeing is because the labor market has been tightening, our workers are getting jobs. Our unemployed workers are now getting jobs. We've noticed that there's more employers reaching out to us to try to post jobs. We've noticed more and more of our workers, as I said, have become employed, which is a good thing. We're happy about that.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a, and that sort of comports with what we understand about what's going on nationally, the very tight labor markets. And we'll see if that, you know, holds into the recovery from the pandemic, but it has been an excellent outcome thus far. One of the only good things to see in the past couple of years. Another issue that is hot, certainly, is workplace discrimination. We had Professor Crowley on a while back, talked about sexual harassment in the workplace, obviously racial discrimination, very, very much in the news. You recently got a grant to study workplace discrimination. Can you tell us what the grant's for and what you plan to study?
Sure. The grant is called, it's under a program funded by the Urban Institute called WorkRise. And we named it A Workplace Divided. And it's set to look to document how U.S. workers perceive and experience racial inequities in the workplace through a national representative survey of Black, Latino, Asian American, and white workers. The findings will be used to inform future program development and policy change and guide future research so that we can try as a country to promote more equitable workplaces and economic opportunity. It is a survey. It will examine perceived discrimination. It will assess opinions of diversity, inclusion, and equity, and evaluate responses by race, gender, income, and education. We just received this grant. So it's a two-year project funded, as I said, by the Urban Institute. We've just started the design phase, and it's being led by Dr. Van Horn and Dr. Ron Quincy, both affiliated with the Boston School.
Right.
We're very excited about that project.
Yeah, both previous guests on this podcast, mm-hmm. too. And so what kind of sample are we talking about? What kind of workplaces are we going to be looking at? What do you think they're going to find?
We haven't made all those decisions yet. Okay. It's a little premature. And we're not surveying workplaces as much as we're surveying individuals. So we will be, like I said, we just received the grant. Gotcha. Maybe we can come back and Carl or Ron can come back at another time and talk about the progress of that sometime in the late summer and early fall. But, you know, it is interesting. You know, one of the things we saw in the New Start Career Network project is, you know, there was a lot of age discrimination out there as well. And we've talked about various types of discrimination. A lot of the laws are pretty weak in both the age discrimination and some instances, the subtle racial discriminations that take place in the hiring process. So we're really, it's both of these areas regarding age and race and discrimination are really interesting research areas, and we're really excited to be working in this space.
Yeah, no, it's a relatively new one from you, from what mm-hmm. I can tell, and it's really obviously important. I do think we'll have to book Carl and Ron
yes.
for the late summer there. You do a lot of program evaluation for the State Department of Labor as well, sort of trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work. Can you give us a few examples of that?
Sure. You know, evaluation and independent evaluation is actually one of our core functions at the center. And we have evaluated probably 100 different kinds of workforce and employment programs in New Jersey and across the United States. So, unfortunately, the majority of our evaluation reports are proprietary to the grant sponsor, but we have conducted evaluations that look at and make recommendations to program operators And more recently, as you mentioned, the state of New Jersey. We have a long history of working with the state of New Jersey, the State Employment Training Commission, and the Department of Labor to look at their programs. So for example, we recently completed an evaluation of what's called their adult literacy program, which is funded by the federal government, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. That should be released. It is a public report. It should be released probably, hopefully, in the next 6 months. We are in the process of evaluating New Jersey's reemployment assistance program for those who are on unemployment insurance. And there's this process by which people on unemployment goes through a profiling process to see if they're more likely to stay on unemployment insurance. Those who've been profiled to maybe be more likely to exhaust their benefits after 26 weeks are then referred to these career counselors for the state for reemployment assistance. And so we are beginning the process of doing a rigorous evaluation, an experimental design of that process. And now we're also in the process of looking at how the state of New Jersey delivered services to folks who were eligible for the Federal Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, both during the pandemic when they shut down all physical operations and provided a lot of services virtually, and then how they're doing it now. And then we're going to look at some data to see how they serve people before that period. So those are three really interesting evaluations.
That brings out the public policy nerd in me for sure, which is never that far from the surface, to be honest. But the challenge in program evaluation, right, is like you have a before and you have an after, but how do you figure out like whether the after is different than the before because of the program or because of other factors entirely?
Well, you know, it's enormously difficult. And some, you know, one of the challenges is working with these grant sponsors and having them even understand what evaluation is and what evaluation isn't. And so some of it is, you know, for example, in the labor department, they wanted us to evaluate, you know, did virtual services work better than in-person services? And we couldn't go back. You know, we don't have the Superman, you know, way back machine or something to go back and say, oh, this is what it looked like pre-pandemic. We can't do that. But we can look at some of the outcome data and see if we can make some inferences that way. But it is a challenge to work with some of the program sponsors who don't really understand evaluation. And we spend a lot of time parsing out what are the research questions that they really want to know. And for the most part, we do a lot of implementation evaluations. How'd the program go? How did it get implemented? Did it get implemented to its design or not? And then we can look at some basic outcome data because we have, part of the center, we have all of the unemployment insurance wage records, which is the data that employers who are covered by unemployment insurance sent to the state on a quarterly basis of industry and wages. We had those dating back to the late 1990s. So we can, if we have Social Security numbers, we can look at people who are in those programs and see over a period of time whether they've been employed in the state of New Jersey, I should say, and what their wages are and what industry they're in. And so we do have some administrative data to work with.
Yeah, we all have this such human tendency to crave these simple explanations. You know, we see comparing online versus right. In person, and we see a difference. And we're like, well, that's because we were online now. But God knows there's been so much else happening over the past couple of years that it's not necessarily that. It may be that. But
well, you know, and some of it's the quality of the data. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to explain what the data that they have, that the operators have, can and cannot tell them. Because sometimes they don't ask, they don't have their administrative databases, don't tell them what they want to know. And I think the other thing is the challenge of operating, doing a program evaluation during a pandemic. I mean, we have, you know, we do evaluations for the Kessler Foundation on their disability employment programs. And traditionally, we would have done a site visit and we would have done in-person interviews with the program operators and with the participants. And during the pandemic, we could do none of that. So we had to interview everybody via Zoom. We couldn't do focus groups like we wanted to. So it really made us shift our methodology. And I don't think it suffered as much, but certainly, you know, there is a difference between going to a program operation and eyeballing, you know, the offices and how people interact versus doing something virtually. It was definitely a challenge.
Yeah, I'm sure. You've talked a lot about data, and really data is central to all of these things you're talking about. It's not the sexiest area. You generally wouldn't build a podcast around it, but it is really important. And it's I know you've done a lot of work trying to improve workforce data. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There was a couple things that we've done. And one of the things we're very, very proud of is over the years, probably for the past 10, 15 years, the federal government, both the U.S. Department of Labor and the U.S. Department of Education have been putting money into having states develop what's called state longitudinal data systems, which is compiling all of the state administrative data, mostly in the education and workforce training area, and seeing how you can conduct research off of one or more of these data systems. A perfect example is, can we look to see who graduates from a New Jersey high school and how do they fare in the labor market over time? So New Jersey has been very, very blessed and very lucky to have gotten grants from the federal government since 2012. And working in partnership with the Heldrick Center, we've been developing a very large and very comprehensive New Jersey longitudinal database in partnership with the New Jersey Department of Labor, the Commission on Higher Ed, the Education, the Department of Education, and the Higher Ed Student Assistance Authority, and motor vehicles, I should say. And you probably ask why motor vehicles is because not all of these their data systems have a common identifier, which is a Social Security number. In fact, the Department of Education, their student data has a special number, so we can't match against individual Social Security numbers. So we use motor vehicle data to sort of use it to help us match people who've graduated from high school. And don't ask me to explain the details of that, but I can't. But anyway, as of 2022, we have millions of individual level state administrative data records from, as I said, unemployment insurance wage data, unemployment insurance claims data, to post-secondary public enrollment and completion data, to all records of individuals completing high school in New Jersey. What we do at the Heldrick Center under Sean Simone, who's our research director, we govern this data system in close partnership with those state agencies. We conduct research and program evaluations using two or more of those data sets. And I'll say that, for example, this is where this brings out the geek in you and the geek in my staff is we are about to release a New Jersey Higher Education Outcomes very visual dashboard using labor wage data and higher education data. We're also about to begin a process of soliciting targeted research from other researchers external to the Heldrick Center to conduct research using the data. And we're sponsoring and training graduate students as interns to be placed in our state agency partners so they understand and learn how to use the data as well and to build the capacity both at the Blaustein School and at the state agencies to understand how to better use administrative data and know what it is. And then I'll say one last thing. And one of the things that we're very proud of is it's been very difficult to share data across state lines. You know, as you can imagine, New Jersey has a very mobile labor market. So there's lots of people work in New York, lots of people work in Pennsylvania. And so you take that UI wage records, we can only look at someone who got a job in New Jersey. But we really want to look at someone who also got a job in Pennsylvania and New York, for example. So we've started the Eastern States Data Collaborative, and we're working now with New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, maybe Rhode Island, maybe Delaware, maybe Maryland, maybe Virginia, to begin the process of how we can share data across state lines to look at some of these, you know, mobility issues and wage issues.
Great. Well, there is a ton of good stuff going on at the Heldrick Center. Thanks for coming on today and walking us through it.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Also, a big thanks to our production team, Amy Cobb and Karen Olson. We are back for our new season, and we will see you next week with another talk from another expert at the Blaustein School. Till then, stay safe.